Welcome to today's introduction to GitLab CI and CD. Today we're going to go. Thank you. Today we're going to go over a bit of what GitLab CI CD is, what it consists of, and go a bit over the lifecycle of a pipeline. I'm going to explain it in a second. We are generally going to go over the general concepts and building blocks of CI CD in GitLab because the topic is very broad and I can only really give a brief introduction today. After the introduction, I'm going to go a bit over two practical examples. We're first going to discuss how to integrate CI/CD into a Rust library, and then go over building a container image and publishing it into GitLab's container registry. As the last step, I'm going to go a bit over debugging and practical tips for using GitLab CI/CD in your projects, and what to avoid, and maybe what resources will be helpful to you when working with it. Okay, so maybe as a short background, I'm Joshua Kupczetski. I primarily work as a student assistant at TU Berlin within the Prove It project. This is also part of the motivation for this talk because we applied and introduced GitLab CI/CD there for a Node.js project within the last year. And I mainly work on system operations and system development for related software. Okay, so GitLab CI/CD. So the CI/CD stands for Continuous Integration and Continuous Delivery. Primarily, continuous integration is intended to accelerate incremental development. So today we don't really ship software as like one package to user. Instead, we usually have the option to update or ship software as a service. And incremental development is usually how this is done. Part of continuous integration is that we want to continuously integrate software. So this means we want to build, test, and verify software to increase reliability of the software products that we produce and also to catch bugs early. So you want to be able to tell very early if, for example, a commit introduces a regression into your system. And the continuous delivery part is about making sure that these iterative development steps can be shipped as soon as possible to a user and to our production systems. So this talk is primarily aimed at software development, at least in the topics that I discuss, but a lot of these steps can also be translated to operations, especially system operations. So many of you are probably familiar with infrastructure as code via tools like Terraform and Ansible, and GitLab has quite deep integration with Terraform and is even capable of acting as a Terraform state storage provider. So this means you can directly store your Terraform state securely within GitLab and integrate it for working in a team on GitLab. Okay. So maybe about GitLab in general. If you're not familiar with GitLab, GitLab is a software forge. So like GitHub, it stores Git repositories and enables collaborative work on software projects. And you will see it quite a lot in open source projects because it's fully self-hostable, even up to air-gapped environments where there's no internet or outbound connections. A few popular instances are something like Debian Salsa or the one from the GNOME project, but also the software forge for OpenCodes projects in Germany are on GitLab, and for the open source software from the EU institutions. Okay, up to the practical part. So what actually is GitLab CI within your projects? Every project within GitLab can contain a file that's called gitlabci.yaml. This file defines a so-called pipeline. This is effectively just a collection of steps that are grouped into stages, and each of these steps is encoded as a so-called job. A job is effectively just something like a shell script plus requirements on how these steps should be executed. So here's a small graph how this looks in practice. You basically have your stages that contain jobs, and these pipelines are initiated by events within your GitLab instance. This is usually something like pushing a new commit, opening a merge request, or for example, publishing a new tag. The YAML file uses a custom syntax. So if you're familiar with something like Kubernetes, you might be familiar with YAML extensions. It supports a lot of them because you will be effectively coding in YAML, which is not very pleasant without extensions. A notable thing about these YAML files is they live alongside your code. So they also can differ between branches and tags. And you can, for example, change a pipeline within a merge request to iterate on the pipeline itself and on the processes embedded there. Okay, so for a practical view, what does a job look like? So this is kind of like a minimal pipeline. You just have one job. In this case, it's called job name. This is the top level tag here, that's a job. And it just contains one tag, script, and one instruction there. If we include this file in a Git repository and made a commit to this repository and pushed it, GitLab would automatically start a pipeline, would execute this job, and would start somewhere a process that would execute our echo hello world commands. In practice, we usually have something that's a bit more complex. We're going to go a bit into that later. But just to notice here, our job consists of one script, and we can later embed some environmental requirements there if we, for example, want to define where that echo comes from as a program. Maybe about the stages. Stages are generally groups of jobs. Stages are executed sequentially in order as defined in the GitLab CI file, and these are used to define effectively the order in which your jobs are executed to model dependencies. So for example, you might want to execute a build job before you execute a test job. Or you might want to execute linting before you even start building to catch errors early. In practice, all jobs within a stage are executed concurrently. This basically means just they will all be dispatched to as many available agents to execute them as possible, but they might not be executed all at the same time if, for example, not all resources are available. If a job in a stage fails, the stage is considered failed and all other stages after it will not be executed and the pipeline will be considered failed. As mentioned before, this is quite important for efficiency because, for example, if I detect something like a syntax error early, I don't need to even start consider executing integration tests because I already know that the build will not succeed at any further point within this pipeline. Okay. An important note here, jobs can pass files between each other. We'll go a bit into how to model that later, but it means that you can also use jobs and stages to model, for example, build processes. So you might want to first do a build of something like a Debian package archive, and then in a later stage build a container image that uses this archive for some software that you have compiled. Okay, a practical example. This is the pipeline that is used for the slides that you're currently looking at. It effectively just has one stage, build, and one job that's also called build. We define the requirements on how we want to execute this job. In this case, this is mostly the image. This is, in this case, a Docker image reference to a custom image on my GitLab instance. And we also define a script. It effectively just contains one command that runs LaTeX, MCAR on the tag file. And we later also declare the artifacts that we want to export out of the job. In this case, this is the compiled PDF file. If you're familiar with LaTeX MCAR, you will probably already know this outpath. It's quite simple. But what we also notably declare there is the so-called tags. So we can give GitLab information on where we want a job to be run. In this case, we tell it that we want to give it a tag NixOS. Which is used to inform it that this job will use Nix, and we want to have an agent that can execute it that is optimized for Nix. This is also quite useful if you, for example, want to execute on multiple architectures because you want to build images for ARM and x68 because one runner is probably not going to be able to handle both. We also define some information about cache that I'm going to go into detail later. Okay, so I mentioned a bit about agents who actually execute these jobs. So these are in GitLab called runners. Runners are registered either on the instance, group, or project level. This is the software that actually executes the script that we defined in the job and also takes care of setting up the environment around it. So within GitLab, the runner type that you will most commonly encounter is the so-called Docker executor. This basically just spawns a Docker container for each job, uses the image that you defined within the job for the script, and then just execute the scripts inside of it. Like you would, for example, use Docker run to execute a command within an image. There are also other runner types, especially if you want to scale up. There's a Kubernetes executor that can spawn pods for jobs, which is quite important if you, for example, have Elastic Load or a big project where you might want to use cloud resources. There's also shell runner and a whole other host of things that you can read more about in the documentation. Today, we'll mostly focus on the Docker runner because that's the thing you'll most likely want to set up if you're self-hosting at a small business scale or smaller. Into the first practical example. So maybe a quick introduction to what I want to discuss today. Our example case is just a basic library that exports one function, and we want to apply automated testing to the existing tests within this library. I don't expect you to be familiar with Rust. To be clear here, the tests and everything else is already written, and we will just execute a command there. I will also try to integrate linting, so I will want to use formatting to catch errors early and also to apply consistent coding style within the project. This might be important if you're applying this within a team context or within a larger team where you want to accept outside contributions and make sure that they're consistent with your existing code base. And also for automated publishing, so continuous delivery, I will want to publish every time I make a new tech on crates.io. So this means publishing my library to the outside world. This could also be applied to an outside registry. Okay, now I'm going to try and exit this presentation. And successfully fail. Sorry, excuse me. This is unfortunately going to take a second. Okay. This. Right. I hope you can all kind of see that, because I unfortunately am currently not able to. Sorry, I'm going to need a second to get this running. Okay, so is everyone in the last row able to read this text on the beamer? Okay, I can make it larger, that's why I'm asking. Okay, don't see any loud complaints. Then let's start. So taking a look at this project, it's basically just some library. It allows you to return an indefinite number of popular cat names, just as an example. And if you're familiar with Rust, it's around 20 lines of actual code. It basically just returns some item from a list. We have some automated tests here that check if a name is emitted every time I call it, and if this name is actually just a name and does not contain spaces in the lines. Building this library is pretty fast. Even clearing the cache, it takes about a second or something. Yeah, 0 to 2 seconds. This is intentionally. Executing the test is also quite fast. As you can see, the tests and the build process itself are pretty fast because this is an example. Practical application, this will of course be longer. Okay, so tests are just run with cargo tests, and we're gonna try and write a pipeline for this. Maybe as a first introduction, the default tag here is the reserved keyword. With this, you can define default attributes that apply to all jobs within a pipeline. In this case, I'm defining a default image for all jobs because all of my jobs will need Rust tools. And if you define a job, you can also override this by just specifying your own image tag. But this is quite helpful if you have a lot of jobs but don't want to repeat your code all the time. So we're going to start our first job. We want to check formatting. In our case, we're just going to call the job cargo FMT. So for the command that we're going to use to check formatting, our script is just going to be cargo fmt check. And as a before script, we are going to add a Rust component at Rust fmt. So basically, as preparation, before our script, we are going to install the formatter. And as the actual script, we are going to execute basically a check for the formatting of the source code files. We are also going to continue a bit and check for the tests. So for this, we are going to add our stages. We want to lint first and then test, because if a lint fails because of syntax error, we don't actually want to try to compile the program again with test. For this, we are just similarly to the build job of the presentation, declare our stage per job. So in this case, this one is going to be in the lint stage, and this one is going to be in the test stage. And because the stages are defined in order, the lint job will be executed before the test job, regardless of the order within each stage. So as a before script here, we don't need to define anything because the testing utility is always installed, and we are just going to run cargo test. This should be enough to get our first pipeline going. So we are just going to git add the file, sorry. Dev demonstrations always take a bit. Go on to this. Apologies. Press this button. I don't think you will see anything at the moment. You are seeing something. That's good. You're still seeing something. Awesome. So we have just published a commit. And we can now insert more pins. Okay, so we have, sorry, the pin, don't worry, I will change all credentials shown here after the talk. I'm aware that, yeah, so we're now gonna open a web browser. So if you're familiar with GitLab, you will be familiar with the web UI because you will use the web UI a lot. In this case, this is on a self-hosted GitLab instance. We can see here that I've added the commit, and the pipeline has already run because it will take around 5 seconds for the whole job. We can see here our two jobs that we have declared and also our stages. You can see the stages right here, and you can also see the jobs per stage. You can see here it executed the job, but also tells us what specific Docker image it used because Rust latest, of course, is just a tag that can be a variable image behind it. It tells us what it did between for each step and also what actually command it executed and what its outputs were. So previously mentioned artifacts for like specific files, but every job also emits its own log files as an artifact that you can download later, which is quite important if you, for example, want to perform log analysis on something or use the logs as a text file because you want to look at log messages more specifically outside of a web interface. We can see here it downloaded our component in the before script and then actually ran the check. Because we don't see any output here, that means it ran successfully. If a command exits with an exit code other than zero, it will fail at this point, similar to a bash script with proper options. We can also go through the stages, see our tests. And yeah, they ran successfully. And we can also notably see here the duration and how much told when it was finished, how long it took in the queue, and yeah. If you're interested in it, you can also notably see on which runner it was executed, which is important if you have issues with your runners, especially if you're self-hosted your infrastructure, they might not be as reliable as you want them to. And this can be quite important information. So in this case, it was the runner called Neon with a specific system ID, which you can give to your administrator and they will probably know what to do with it. Okay. Let's then, we kind of have the continuous integration set up. Every time we will now push a commit, push a tag, open a merge request, these pipelines will be executed. Let's actually go then onto the publishing step. So I previously mentioned we want to publish those things on Crates.io. So Crates.io, if you're not familiar with Rust, is basically the public package registry for Rust packages hosted by the Rust Foundation. So this comparably to NPM or PyPy. In our case, we will introduce a new stage for this. We will call deploy. And we will introduce a new job to this. We will call it deploy crate. Maybe as a note about the job names. Job names in general need to be less than 265 characters and are not allowed to contain the keywords like default, but are otherwise freely choosable. So you should probably not choose true, but you can generally just choose something with spaces or anything else that fits your needs. You might want to keep them consistent if you're working in a team because other people will probably want to just look at a list and want to know what the job actually does without going into the pipeline file. Okay, we are gonna declare which stage we want to execute this in. We'll declare our script. In Cargo's case, this is pretty simple. We just say cargo publish and it will upload it if it has all the credentials. I'm gonna go into a bit where they are currently now. And yeah, this is the whole pipeline for publishing in this step. And I will also define so-called rules. So GitLab jobs have the ability to declare when they want to be run. Effectively, you can declare a set of rules that will be applied for each job that will decide if they're executed or not for each event. So push, tag, whatever. In our case, we want to only define a single rule. We only want to run this job if a Git commit is actually a Git tag is actually published. In this case, we can do this by telling it when a certain I will actually just look at a reference because I don't know that from the top of my head. When a certain variable is set. In this case, if the CI commit tag variable is set, this is just, in this case, an environment variable that is set by GitLab by default, like a lot of other variables. So GitLab kind of gives you a lot of information about each job when it evaluates your pipeline file. This will also be how the secrets will be passed into the job. Rules and other pipeline tasks, like, for example, your scripts can use these to automatically get information about the GitLab instance that they're running on or the project that they are attached to. And in practice, this means for us, we can make sure that our job here only runs when a tag is published and only runs when it is on a so-called committed tag. This is GitLab specific and effectively just means this tag is protected and can only be published by someone with the owner or maintainer role in this case. This is quite important because you, for example, don't want to accidentally start this job when just a contributor opens a merge request, even if it is a tag. Because usually this means the job will fail because credentials will not be available, hopefully. And also, as another thing, we are going to introduce the so-called environment property here. We are going to give this job an environment that it will deploy to. Environments, in general, are just metadata that you can attach to a job that will inform GitLab that this job is to a specific deployment target. So that means it will give you an overview of what specific commit is or tag is deployed to a deployment target, will be in the web UI. And also, it gives you the option to bind credentials to this environment. And further, it even makes sure that no two jobs can deploy to a target at the same time. This means this job will not run with another tag at the same time, which importantly will mean that, for example, if you use something like Terraform, you don't accidentally run two applies at the same time, which would probably be a good idea. Okay, we are gonna finish, we are gonna push this part of the CI here. Deployment. We are gonna sign all commits. We are gonna publish them. And we can now, in the web UI, see that the commit will have been published, but our new job will not actually have been executed because we haven't published the tag. So you can see here, you can only see these two jobs. On the contrary, for the same pipeline, having it written beforehand, you can see that for another tag, for example, this job would have been visible. This is in the past, but yeah. Okay, so we are now gonna actually do a version bump. We're gonna go into a cargo file, tell it we want a new version. Just to make sure we run the tests and also to regenerate the log file, and then we're gonna create a new commit for the new version. Give the create a version bump. The specific commit titles do not matter here; they're mostly just for my accounting. And then we're gonna publish a new commit here. With GitLab CI, you have these so-called protected refs, and in my case, I've defined a protected ref for everything that starts with a V. That means all tags starting with a V will be protected, and only owners or maintainers can publish them. In my case, I'm registered as an owner role because I've created a repository. If you invite external contributors, like for example, team members in a shared project, they might usually be only developers and would not be able to do this in a normal repository. You can extend privileges to them, but yeah. We're going to publish the tag, CLT test version. It's just a tag message, it does not carry meaning in this case. Sign our tag, publish our tag to Git. And now we will see some new pipelines in the overview. So now you can see GitLab has recognized we have published a new tag and actually has also queued our job for the specific pipeline. So in this case, we can wait for the lint and test to go through, which will take about 10 seconds, luckily. And publish will have started. But as you can notice, it has not found its credentials. That's because I have defined the API token for the specific to one environment. So you've seen I've set environment, or you would have seen I've set environment name OCI, but I have only defined the specific credential here for the environment crates.io. So if you're using GitLab CI, you will have to use the web UI or the API for this. And you can effectively define variables outside of your pipeline file that will be shared by all workflow, by all pipelines within a repository. In this case, I've previously defined a cargo registry token variable that is protected and masked and hidden. When you define your variable, you can set these options. And in practice, they just mean, is your variable visible within the job log? Otherwise, when they are shared to the runner will censor the log files before it publishes them to GitLab, which is quite useful because it means you cannot accidentally leak one of those secrets unless someone, for example, base64 encodes them. It's not security, it's only for accidents. And yeah, you can also notably protect them. So similar to the job, this variable is only available on protected refs, which in our case, AuTag is. And you can also limit it to specific environments. In our case, our variable here is limited to crates.io. So if I now go through the whole flow again, actually, I will look at the time. And we will not go through the whole flow again, sorry. If I now updated this environment here, set this to crates.io, I will show you how this would look in practice in a second. Now published a new tag, pushed it to GitLab, then this would actually succeed. In a practical application, this would look something like... Will the web UI work? It will work. It would look something like this previous run here. This took about 30 seconds. That looks about right. And because here it deployed to the environment crates.io, it actually got the proper credentials and it was able to successfully publish it. You can actually see within GitLab's overview here which commit is currently applied to this environment. And you could, for example, if this was deployed with something like Terraform, also stop it. So you could use environments to model, for example, staging instances for merge requests. This is actually how we apply it at our current, at my current employer. Okay, that I think was enough about this example. We're going to go over to the BuildKit example. So with a look at the time, I'm going to go a bit faster here. We have seen in our job that every time I needed to use the formatter or another tool that's not part of the minimal image, I needed to install them with Rust up-add. This was, for example, for Rust FMT, the Rust formatter. This, of course, means every time I execute this job, I will download this extra binary, which is both not very nice to shared infrastructure and also not particularly helpful for my own bandwidth usage. So to address this, I want to build a custom Docker image that basically is just Rust latest, so the Rust minimal image with the latest stable version, plus the components that I need for my pipeline. In this case, I want the Rust formatter and the Rust linter, so Clippy. I could also use Clippy as a separate job. I've omitted that here because it needs some extra setup to work well within a pipeline. Okay, so building this Docker file, if you're familiar, is just Portman build. I won't do that here because that would mean I need to spin up Portman and stuff. But in the practical application in GitLab, this is a bit more elaborate. So what I would do in GitLab is I would use either Docker and Docker or Docker build kit if I want to use Docker instead of Portman. Either solutions need to have some work done to them because in a runner, we usually don't have root privileges as in a privileged container. And in our case specifically here, we will use BuildKit, which is the tooling that currently powers Docker Build X, if you're familiar with it, and can also be used for multi-architectural builds if you want to build, for example, an image that's compatible with both ARM and x64 under the same tag. In our case here, we will, in the before script, so basically the preload to the stuff that we actually want to do, use variables from the GitLab CI, to authenticate with the GitLab container registry. Every project in GitLab has a package and container registry attached to it. In our case, we are just authenticating with directly here with the variables provided by the GitLab runner, and we want to build the current Docker file. That's the part here, where we basically just tell it, this is a Docker file, build it, it's in the current working directory, and use the current working directory as context for the build. We will also tell it where to publish the image. In our case, this will be under the CI registry image variable here. This is a variable set by GitLab that contains the path to your Docker registry that is attached to your project, and we will publish it there under the name Rust Extended Simple. simple as here is the suffix here, because there's also a variant of this where I've included caching that I will show as part of the questions if anyone wants to see the extended form. And yeah, if I were now to execute this, it would publish the image, and we can actually, in this case, look at the logs, because that will take a second, and I don't want to keep you waiting. Ignore the red crosses. So we, for example, can see here, I can actually just use here. We have published here on simple. And you can see here, our job is here. And it just effectively built the image and then published it to our GitLab registry. We can now view it in the Web UI overview, and we could also use this now to use as an image tag within our pipeline. And that could be used to emit the before script for Rust app component add. In general, this is more as an example of what you can do within these environments for more complex use cases. So you see, for example, here I have texts that are architecture specific. So this simple image will only be built for ARM64. Specifically, this is an Arch builder on Hetzner Cloud. And this specific image will then also only be published for that specific architecture and run on a runner that supports BuildKit. So if you're self-hosting this, you will need to be aware, basically building Docker images outside of a custom solution like Nix will require a privileged runner if you want to use Docker, BuildR, or BuildKit. It's called rootless, but that does not mean it will be run without root. I do not need to do that. This is more as an example of how these tags can be used to effectively guide your GitLab instance to run on the right host. And we can also see, I said, job-specific variables. In this case, I set an environment variable that's used by GitLab to disable some of the sandboxing, because even with a privileged runner, this will not run within Docker. You can also see I can apply normal overrides that you might be familiar with from Docker CLI. So I, in this case, override the entry point because I do not want to just run the BuildKit daemon, but instead use the CLI to build my specific image directly in the script step. In this case, only the CMD would be executed for each of the commands in the script section, which would, for this specific image, be just bin sh. Okay, you can also see here tag latest. When we're on the main branch, as defined in the rules here, where we say if the current branch where this commit has been scheduled is the default branch, so for a repository that would usually be main, then execute the step and tag the current image that I've built for this commit in the previous job as latest. Okay, for a practical example of how this would look, we are going to look at a pipeline that has been executed on main, which is the default branch for this project. And we can see here, this took about 28 seconds. And we have built here two images for MD64 and Arch. I'm going to go a bit into how this was split up in a second. For our, this was only be ARM. We would build this image, we've seen this already. And then we would just execute a step that effectively just retakes the image. Gonna quickly change to the more extended version because I have 3 minutes for this. The important step here is this part. So GitLab allows you to split up a job over a so-called matrix. If you're familiar with GitHub actions, you might be familiar with matrix builds. Effectively, this just means you can run a job with a variable that changes over each of the job's iterations over a matrix. So if you're maybe a linear algebra, you can imagine you have a vector where each entry is effectively one system architecture type, and I might want to run the job for each of the system architecture types, or each of the system architecture types times, for example, a system. So I might want to run, for example, another matrix variable here that could be called OS, where I would want to run ARM64 and ARM64 for Linux and Windows. So I would, in this case, spawn 4 jobs from this one declaration, which is quite helpful if you, for example, want to publish a binary that is for multiple architectures and is cross-compiled. These tags, most notably, can also be used within the... These variables can be used within tags, which in this case is used to guide GitLab to dispatch the ARM64 and the ARM64 builds to different runners. So in this case, this would on one side be the Hetzner box and on the other side be the Neon Builder. Okay. In the UI, this looks something like this. So you can see it still recognizes this as one job, but specializes it for the system variables that we've set. And in the tech latest job, this is where it looks a bit crude. We effectively just, this collapsed here, we effectively just stitch together these two images into one so that we only have one latest image that points to two different images for the different architectures. This is how you in practice, I'm just gonna open the manifest here. This is how you in practice can just specify one image tag within something like a job and then let GitLab decide on which one it wants to run a job. So if your job is not architecture specific, maybe you're just running a linter that's just checking general rules, you can just let the instance decide, hey, I have three slots on one of my ARM64 runners, just run it there instead of my x64 runner that's probably over, that's probably under provisioned for the load that we have on there. GitLab will sometimes not show this correctly in the web UI, which is why I would recommend you in this case to get familiar with normal container tools like Crane from Go Container Registry. Because they can more specifically give you information about which specific things are in a container tag. Okay, move that out of the way. I would also now, in the 1 minute that we have for this, show how this would look in a full application. So if we were to now integrate this into our workflow, we would simply substitute the image tag here with the reference to the GitLab image that we've just built. So you will see in the web UI, this is the easiest way to get at it, unfortunately, you have a container registry tab. You can go there. We can see here our Rust extended image, search for the latest tag, hopefully find it, see that GitLab does not recognize it, copy the tag, and then just use it like this. And effectively, now this job can just be scheduled by GitLab to whatever runner that's available for ARM64 or x64. Which is really nice if you have a mixed pool of runners, because usually ARM64 runners will be less used than the x64 runners, just from practical experience. Okay, that's kind of the practical overview. I'm now gonna try to keep it brief on which of, you know, that looks about right. I don't know. No. Apologies. Right. Go here. Go here. Right. The presentation is not online anymore, of course. I hope you're now able to see something. Here and then quickly go over this whole thing. Okay. Okay. So tips and tricks for debugging. I hope you can. Yes, it's visible. I'm not going to worry about around tomorrow. Testing pipelines is somewhat painful. So I've just now published commits that just worked because they somehow had correct syntax and only contained one step. In practice, you probably will not do that, especially because GitLab can sometimes be a bit unintuitive about documentation. Especially because GitLab is at this point not a new product anymore, and there's not just one GitLab. There are different editions. So there's an enterprise edition, especially if you use the project management features, and there are a lot of major versions that are still supported. So I think they have up to 2 years for each major versions, which in practice means you could be something like a year behind the latest features. And if you just try something, it might not throw the error that you expect, or it might succeed when you want it to actually fail. Local execution is somewhat emulatable. There are people who have tried to emulate what a GitLab runner does, but as you've seen kind of the variables, it injects a lot of information into your workflows. And the only real way to test this is by, for example, opening a renew branch and iterating there and pushing and pushing. This is painful, I'm aware. The best way to kind of handle this is to not embed too much logic into the script steps. So as you've kind of seen with the initial pipeline for the presentation, I didn't manage the dependencies for the actual LaTeX installation within GitLab. Instead, I managed them with Nix in this case, but you could also, for example, manage them via the container image. That makes it a lot easier to debug locally because you can just run the container image locally and debug the things there instead of trying to emulate what happens in the script steps. This is also very helpful because script steps can fail due to something like network conditions. What if Docker Hub has a rate limit that surprisingly now catches you because you have a shared instance? In general, it's also a good idea to pair continuous integration with existing reproducible tooling. So something like Nix, Docker, whatever, something that helps you repeat builds locally and in CI is very helpful even if you're already using something that's containerized. This is why building Docker images inside something that is actually Docker is part of a practical application, because you might want to build these images in a known well environment instead of your local dev machine, where you might have some special options set on the Docker daemon that will not work on the machine of your colleague. Other tips, use tooling. GitLab has a lot of first-party tooling to help you develop. You might have seen kind of when I wrote this pipeline, it gave me like inline hints for what options were available. This is powered by LSP that I've published, GitLab CRLS. It integrates with VS Code, Helix, NeoVim, whatever you want to use, and can give you inline hints and direct feedback that would otherwise only be available in the web UI. It can, for example, tell you if a tag will not be applicable or if a tag has an option that is not supported, because some tags only accept true or false, or maybe some string values. And you might want to have a checker there. There is also a linter for GitLab CI files. This is not something you do need to use. I, for example, generally don't use it, but it can be useful to find some common pitfalls, especially if you're getting started and you don't intuitively see like, oh, that's an unusual way to write it. Maybe it can give you a shorter way to write a certain expression. Formatters, you will be writing a lot of YAML. Use something like Prettier to get a consistent coding style out of it, because mixed tabs are not very nice to deal with, especially if someone is using a text editor that produces them natively like VS Code. Recommendations in general. GitLab has a lot of features. If you look at the documentation, it's kind of like a whole goodie bag of things you could throw in there to make your thing maybe more efficient. You generally want to be very selective about what you use. Things like caching can be helpful, but can also be not very helpful if your GitLab instance is not configured right. You might want to check there. You also need to take care of, GitLab has a lot of features that are very useful for complex workflows, but introducing them just offloads the complexity to GitLab. That means if you use them too much or if they produce errors, you will still have to deal with their complexity somehow. And in general, this is just something where you need to be very careful, because making your pipelines too complex can be a very good time sink. Then document your pipelines. It's YAML, it's just declarative, but it's still code. You're still writing effectively a bash script with a lot of external environments. I didn't write any comments here because this was just a demonstration, but if you write something that's more like 5 lines, you do want to place comments there. It just accepts normal YAML comments with a hashtag or multi-line comments. Do yourself and your future self especially a favor there. Otherwise, GitLab has relatively good documentation. It notably has documentation that tells you which stuff is available in which version and under which variant of GitLab. It also notably tells you a lot of practical examples. So for example, the BuildKit stuff that I showed you here that looks relatively complex is just from the documentation. They have every variant of how to build Docker images for Docker, Portman, whatever, documented with practical examples. Use that. I've only extended the variant here for caching, but I do have practical applications, and if you have an issue with them, you can actually open an issue in the issue tracker and they will answer most of the time. Release notes. If you are considering hosting GitLab, read the release notes. They will tell you when they will deprecate a feature, and after something like 1 to 2 years, they will actually remove that feature. And there is usually not a way to get that feature back by just patching GitLab. It's also usually a good idea to have like 1 year ahead, because if, for example, your colleagues are effectively your customers when you are the admin, you want to give them maybe information ahead of time so that they can adapt, and maybe you can provide alternate solutions. General recommendations, be aware of shared resource usage. I mentioned before using caching to reduce bandwidth usage. In general, your GitLab cache is probably cheaper in terms of cost for the bandwidth consumed than public resources. You also probably shouldn't be overusing public resources because while PyPI will not charge you for that bandwidth, someone still has to pay for it. And if you can avoid using shared resources too much, that's generally a good idea. You also have to consider some resources are not free. They actually have quotas on them. Specifically, Docker Hub will limit you if you pull too many images. GitLab has mechanisms for that. It has a dependency proxy that can proxy requests to PyPI and NPM, and also a proxy for Docker Hub specifically, which you can embed in your pipelines to reduce usage on these shared resources and also reduce usage per IP address that pulls from Docker Hub. You will probably run into this if you're self-host and have a lot of pipelines that have something that pull always in. Avoid work when possible. Use caching. I mentioned it can be slower than just building stuff, but especially if your job is like more than a few minutes, caching is probably a good idea. You notably also have a lot of freedom in how you choose your caches. You can have more than one cache per pipeline, and you can effectively choose the cache key yourself. So I can, for example, say the cache key is just the Go mod and Go sum file for a Go project, and cache this specific folder for all that share the same Go mod and sum file. Or I can have a cache that is shared for exactly one pipeline, for example, cache the target folder from Rust to enable incremental compilation across jobs. The cache is loaded before your job starts, before the before script, and saved after the after script ends, after the job generally is cleaned up. Use rules and document those rules. Rules are pretty easy expressions, but you generally should try to use them and not just let jobs fail when you don't expect them. If you only expect a job to run in one specific scenario, write a rule for that. Even a job that is only scheduled and just fails still consumes a runner slot somewhere and takes up time in the queue for jobs. Okay, if we look at the time, thanks for listening. The slide sources will be available there, probably today, maybe tomorrow. I'll still have to finish up kind of cleaning up all of the different artifacts that I've shown here. And yeah, the examples are available under these URLs. They are public now. You should also be able to see the pipeline logs for these if you want to take a look at how GitLab actually handles some of the more extended cases. For example, the build kit also has full support for caching, which is why in the example, it built the whole Docker image one architecture in like 10 seconds because it didn't actually build it. It just loaded it from cache. Okay. There would now be time for questions. I also have some backup slides if you want to see more extended examples of how this can be applied to software.
Thank you very much, Joshua, for that great presentation. Also, my respect for solving all the technical problems in front of an audience. So, does anybody have a question for our presenter? Oh, in the very back. It takes a second.
Maybe. Could you have a short word about switching the graphical interface and the text interface of YAML? I'm wondering if the comments get removed if you switch back and forth. You mostly did use the text interface of YAML, right, and edited directly, but I think there is also in this web thingy, there is a graphical representation.
Yes. So GitLab has, so the kind of UI that you see, for example, this should be, so this is just a workflow for something else. This is just effectively the status of a running pipeline. GitLab has two different web editors. One is called a so-called Web IDE. That's effectively just VS Code in your browser. And the web editor for pipelines, I think it's officially called Pipeline Editor. You don't lose any information when you use them. They're just effectively text editors inside of your browser. And this is really just a read-only display where you can easily cancel a running pipeline if you, for example, don't expect it to succeed, or you can retry jobs if they, for example, failed because of a flaky test or a network failure, something similar. Okay. Thank you.
More questions? No. Okay. And thanks again for the presentation.